This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write, and for readers to read a good book. And also, if you are thinking of your electric bill, it is also a time to think of solar energy. And I want to thank one of our sponsors, Go EHS, if you're looking for solar power. No, I don't know. Everybody is looking at their electric bills because we've had some cold weather here in Florida. But I know somebody who's had really cold weather, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Jerome Preisler. And the name of the new book is Netforce Threat Point. And this is book three in the remake of ongoing life of Tom Clancy. It's sort of nice to know he keeps going and going and going. Hi, Jerome.
Hi. We've cracked 34 degrees here, so it's actually toasty.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's so nice. And do you have a big fireplace?
I'll be able to walk down my steps and instead of a fall down and tripping on the ice.
Oh.
I do have a fireplace, yes, and that's so, you know, things balance off that way.
Yeah, that's a saving grace of when you live in cold country. At least if you have a fireplace and you have a good book or two or three.
Yeah, exactly.
You can survive it, right?
Yeah, I can. It's great to hear you, Patsy. I listen to the cheerful opening music and hear your voice, and I get a smile on my face.
Well, thank you. And I was thinking, I am. So happy to talk to you because your book in 2020, you know, it's going to be 2022 in a few days. And in 2020, of course, my favorite book is one of your books. And it's because I love Civil War Commando, William Cushing, and the daring raid to sink the ironclad CSS Albemarle. Now, that was 2020. It feels like yesterday. But that was my favorite book for 2020.
Wow. Thank you.
I read a lot of books. Today.
Yeah, you do. You do.
You know, today is the 104th program for the year. So I'm on, over that time, I've spoken to lots of authors. I speak to two on every program. Although today it's just you. I don't want to talk to anybody else. I just want to talk to you. I could talk to you. I think I one time said to you, I could talk to you every week.
The co-host.
Yeah, exactly. You could be. But that book still, it resonates so much with me, and I talk about it all the time to people. I keep telling them, if you are really want a book that just gives you such joy, I found such joy in this book, Civil War Commando, and just getting to know Will Cushing as you wrote about him, I think is terrific. As you know, I sent a note to, I don't know what those Pulitzer people do, but I sent them a note, email. I said, what are you doing? You've got to because
I don't know if it's people are hearing you or what, but I did notice, and I don't have any concrete sales figures, but just from kind of observing some of the numbers over the holidays, it looks like it's actually selling a few copies over the Christmas holidays. And I would imagine it's the kind of thing that, you know, if you have anyone in your family who likes action stories, history of the Civil War, it's such a great book. And I think last, when it came out, which was, what, was it just last year?
2020.
Was 2020. So it was actually during, you know, it came out just after the election and before all the hubbub, in January. And even though I was able to really do, everything was in lockdown at that time, but I was able to do a lot of stuff on the radio. I think that there was so much noise, and that's the problem, I think, with a lot of books at times, that, you know, there's so much noise in the airwaves that it kind of got somewhat lost in that shuffle. But I think that now that things are a little quieter, and may they stay that way, I think people are starting to pick up the book and read it. And of course, you know, that for me is, you know, is a wonderful thing. That was truly, you know, you hear the term labor of love used all the time, but you know, that book I poured a lot into that book.
And it is clear. And I have, what I did actually, at the beginning of December, I put out through my Facebook page, I did a promo for it. I've also, and I hashtagged quite a few different organizations, including, you know, some military organizations, because if someone is looking for the perfect gift for anyone who's been in the military, they will love this book, because it's really the start of the Navy SEALs, and it makes it so exciting and a really forgotten part of the Civil War history. And the entire thing, when you read about Will Cushing and somebody to admire, somebody to really... he gives me a thrill when I read about him. I hope, and I have said this many times, and I tell people, I hope that Hollywood will pick it up, because that will be the way, you know, for us to see it, you know, really becoming a bestseller. And I have put that out there, and as a perfect gift for anyone you know in the military. And I'm going to do a big push for it again for Valentine's Day, for anyone who is giving a book to, you know, anybody, any vet, male, female, anybody who's been involved in the military, and anyone who just loves America will love Civil War Commando.
And this is a romantic, capital R story. This guy was a swashbuckler.
Yeah.
It was a Latter-day Knight. And, yeah, you know, I was thinking randomly that one of the things I did with that book, because I write a lot of fiction, and it was written in a narrative or novelistic style. I'd done a number of histories. I did it, two books about World War II. I did something about an incident in the Cold War. With this one, because it was an era that I was actually much less familiar with, and I deliberately wanted that when I started writing. I knew a lot about World War II. I knew all of the broad stroke stuff about the Civil War, but there were a lot of little things that I didn't know, and I wanted to be able to learn them. I wanted them to be fresh to me. So when I was writing about Will getting aboard a train going from starting out in Baltimore and going to visit his brother in West Point, New York, I knew he's taking the railroad, but I frankly had no idea, you know, where did he transfer, where did he change, how long would it take, what were the lines he would have taken, and all of that stuff I researched. What did the trains look, what was, you know, what would he have seen aboard the train, what would the cars have looked like, when people that I knew were being given certain medications or were injured. Well, you know, how were they administered? All of that stuff went into the research of that book, and I think it gives it a certain, you know, I look back on it and I read some passages, and it gives it a certain texture. I try to use language that was, and a style of writing that was actually very different than that which I normally use or have used in anything else I'd written. I wanted it to sound as if it was being told over a campfire or in a by a fireplace, by someone who was maybe 10 years removed from the events of that book. I wanted it to be, you know, Will's, in my mind, it was a nephew of Will's or a, you know, some relative, or friend who survived Will, who was sitting with his kids and saying, you know, this is about, there was a giant of a man named Will Cushing. Have you heard of him? And just telling his story. So I think that's what's for me, that's what I love about that book. When I go back to the process of it, that's the most important thing to me.
Well, there's depth to it, there's charm to it, and as you said, romance. He is such a romantic character and so young. And I know that the actor who gets this part, and it has to be turned into a streaming video, you know, a three-part series, six-part series. You could do six parts easily. A wonderful, wonderful series. And, you know, the Jack Reacher series is coming out February 4th. And
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, aren't we all? It's going to be exciting. And then, of course, the new actor, the one selected for Jack Reacher, actually looks like Jack Reacher. Yeah, Alan Richardson. Now, this guy, this actor, is going to be forever. I'm going to tell you right now, he is forever going to be Jack Reacher. And he's really, from, you know, everything I've seen, he's perfect for the part. And, you know, of course, Lee was on for his birthday. We were talking about it, and he's so happy with the selection.
Yeah, and I actually heard that show.
Huh?
So I actually listened to that show.
Yeah. You know, the wonderful thing about it, of course, you know, in Lee, or, you know, I call him Jim, of course, he when he wrote Reacher, he imagined himself as Reacher, you know, 6'5", handsome, blue eyes. And I told him, well, if you buffed up, a little bit, maybe you would look like Alan Richardson. But this actor is going to he's just walking away with his part. He's going to be fantastic. And that wonderful thing about Will, he was so young. He was so very young. And he's going to be the actor who gets his part is going to be so lucky.
Yeah, and you know, he had these, you know, he was a prolific letter writer. In one of the earlier drafts of the book, I actually used, I just put the letters in that he'd written in whole. And there were excerpts and some passages that I left, but it got to be, I felt in reading over the book just before I turned in the final draft, it looked to me like it was it was breaking up the narrative flow a little bit. So I trimmed that, but he was a really colorful letter writer, and he is probably the person, other than one of his brothers, Alonzo, the person that he was closest to was his cousin Mary. And he'd grown up with her, and he was always writing to her. And of course, you know, he didn't know, you know, in those days, who knew if the letters were reaching the person? It would be months before you heard back. But he would just keep on writing in this constant stream of communication, and write about all of his escapades. And what was interesting about that was that when I was writing the book, I thought, well, okay, a lot of it, you know, you are talking about a young man, and he did have a tendency to embellish in his letters, so I've got to get the facts right. So what I started doing was I was able to, basically I used his letters as my foundation and as my kind of template. And then I would look at something that he'd written his cousin Mary about, or his mother about, and I would say, well, let me now I got to find out exactly what happened. So I would get hold of all of the post-action reports that were written by the Navy. I would get hold of all of as many newspaper accounts as I could, and I'd find a lot. I'd find these little, you know, three-paragraph stories about a raid that really didn't even mention Cushing, but mentioned a particular raid on a particular date on a particular body of water in Virginia, and it would sync right up, you know. And there would be something, you know, this a cotton-bearing vessel was burned down, and that was exactly what Will wrote about. So then I sync that up for the action report and get the full picture. But really, throughout it all, it was those letters that he was writing and his, you know, his own descriptions that were at the heart and soul and core of the book and drove me along. So,
well, that's why it reads so beautifully. It's just so rich in details. It takes the reader into the place. I mean, we are there. We can feel it. We can see it. We can smell it. You are so descriptive. Your writing is so beautiful. And I mentioned this to you before, that this is a book, you know, writers, you know, books come out. There are so many books, and you've written over 40 books, and so many authors have written, you know, 40, 50 books. Very few of their books are going to be read, you know, 20 years from now, 40 years from now. This book is really an evergreen. It is going to be read 100 years from now, 200 years from now, because it is so beautifully researched and beautifully written. And that's why I think it's so special. And that's why I tell people, when you find a passion for a subject, like you found with Rit, you know, with Will, you came across somebody who nobody really had written about or thought about for years, and he sort of took over you, and his words are coming to life through your brilliant writing.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I, you know, when I write something like that, it's exactly what you're saying is one of the things I always keep in mind, and that kind of drives me through all the, you know, the daily slog of, you know, trying to get actually doing the, you know, rolling up my sleeves and sitting down for all those hours alone writing the story. It's that, you know, I keep in mind that in the end, it's bringing this guy to light. It's bringing his life to light. It's letting people know that he lived and this is what he did. And you know, that to me is really the most important thing, is that people need to know about Will Cushing. He was a great American hero. He was a great character. Yes, I really, you know, I'm glad you feel that way, because that's the beauty of writing about history. And sometimes when it's somebody who's so little known, it's really it just kind of keeps the pleasure on top of things, that I know that I could, you know, get his story told. So.
Well, you've done him justice. You have really brought him to life. And now we have to work on getting him noticed by Hollywood. As a matter of fact, I was just working the other night. I've got lots of things going on in my life, but I'm working on some graphics and some promos getting ready for Valentine's Day. And one of the promos is for this book, talking about a romantic character and how we would love to see this, just bring him to life in a wonderful, wonderful series. And somehow, you know, it will only take getting to one person in Hollywood. If we could find a young actor who's, you know, wants a juicy part. You know, when I worked in Hollywood, their actors were always looking for that one part, that one juicy part that would break them out of the crowd scenes, you know, behind Fonzie. I knew quite a few people who were working, you know, in sitcoms, and they're, you know, really good actors, and they were just looking for that part. And somebody has to get this book, some young actor has to get this book and say, oh my gosh, go to his agent and say, oh my gosh, I am Will Cushing. I'm Will Cushing. Do this.
You know, one interesting thing is, when I was working on it, thank heavens for Google Books and scanning everything under the sun. And so I was able to use a lot of the first hand source material, a lot of the battle reports and naval histories, the contemporaneous naval histories, have been scanned in, so it saves you 1,000 trips to Washington, D.C., and a lot of money. And one of the things that I just turned up in one of my sort of stream of consciousness searches was this, I don't know, maybe a 30 or 40 or 50 page book about Will Cushing. It was written in the 1870s, but it was a children's book, and the history was completely inaccurate. They had, you know, put all this dialogue in his mouth that he didn't say, or that he certainly, I don't know where they got it from. Clearly, it was just something that was, you know, being a writer, I can tell when a writer makes stuff up, and clearly this dialogue was made up. A lot of the escapades were, you know, they really strayed from the facts. But the fascinating thing about it was that I thought somebody, and I can't even remember the author's name, but some author in circa 1870 or so knew that this would be something that would captivate adolescents, had the sense that this guy, that Will Cushing's life was so full of adventure and so colorful that it would be something that nowadays, I guess, that book would probably be considered a YA. You know, they didn't have that term back then, but it was clearly written for a young readership. And I find that fascinating because as you talk about, doing something for the streaming TV, I think that there was somebody sitting, you know, reading a newspaper or something, thinking, wow, this is a great story. I've got to tell it. But did it, for whatever reason, chose to do it in a fictionalized way. Yeah, but I just find that interesting.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing, I just, my guest the other day was Bob Dylan-Schlider, who wrote a book called Nailing It. And it's a book about 20-somethings, 20 people who were in their 20s who did something wonderful. And he selected 25 people, and his book is really great. And when I think of it, you know, that here we have Will. He was so young, and he did so much, and he was a romantic hero that this is just perfect for the time. You know, this is the right time for a story about Will Cushing. Before, it would have been, I don't know if people would have understood a full-length feature film, but in the streaming world now, where you can have like 6 episodes, so you can really, really, you know, pull the whole story together. And so that's, you know, that's the next step, and I know that it's going to happen, because I see it as a streaming video, and as an inspiring one for young people to say, whoa. And we do have young people today. We have young people who are joining the military, and they are brave. And we've had so many who have, you know, given their lives, and so many who have, you know, gotten awards for their bravery. And I think all of those people will relate to this story. So I'm working. I'm not giving up on this, Commando, because that's one of the problems, you know, with books nowadays. Publishers don't give you a heck of a lot of help. A book comes out, and then you've got a 3-week run, maybe 6 weeks if you're a David Baldacci, and then they forget about you. And nobody hears about the book again. But we're not going to let Commando disappear, because I want people to keep hearing about it. And I also want people to hear about the new book, Net Force Threat Point. But I have to take a commercial break. So you hold on, okay? And we're going to do a commercial break. And once I do that, then we're going to come back and talk about this new book. You know, it's completely different. And I'm never, ever going to let anybody forget about Will Cushing. But we also want to promote this wonderful new book you've written, the third book in this series, since you sort of restarted this whole, what do they call it? This is Net Force.
It's a reboot. It's a reboot of a series that was co-created by Tom Clancy. And I will bridge the two for you when you come back.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so we're going to have a commercial break. I hope we're going to have a commercial break. If not, I'm going to keep talking, because suddenly my guy in the control room disappeared on me for a minute. So we'll keep talking. What the heck? I can talk to you all day long. And then once he comes back, we're going to have a commercial break, and we're going to, maybe we'll just keep talking. I don't know what happened to him. Big Ed in the control room. What the heck? Let's just keep talking. There's Big Ed. He's come back. We're going to do the commercials. Oh, okay. And then we're coming back, and we're going to talk about Net Force Threat Point, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my wonderful, wonderful guest, Jerome Preissler, and we're talking about NetForce Threat Point. That's his newest book in this wonderful series that keeps Tom Clancy going on and on and on, like that bunny rabbit. Hi, Jerome.
I don't know if Tom would appreciate being compared to a bunny rabbit, but I get it.
Well, you know, that's what he is.
He was a kind of a big, big bunny
rabbit. Yeah, big, cuddly bunny rabbit. Whoa. So this new book, you know, I am one of those people. It's funny. When I read a book, I read it, when you say cover to cover, I literally read it from cover to cover. I start at the beginning. I always look at to see to whom it's been dedicated, because I like to know. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's somebody with a simple name, like Suzanne, or sometimes people will give an explanation, you know, it's to my third grade teacher who encouraged me, kind of stuff. And then I love always the quotes that, you know, some authors will put a quote in the beginning, or some authors will put a poem in the beginning. And you selected a poem that it's very relevant to me. So tell us, why did you select this poem?
I'll read it. It's very short. And it's actually by Lee Bay, or Bai, who wrote in the 700, around 700, 750 AD. And the poem, if I can find it, is Bears, Dragons, Tempestuous on Mountain and River. Startle the forest and make the heights tremble. Clouds darken beneath the darkness of rain. Streams pale with the pallor of mist. The gods of thunder and lightning shatter the whole range. And it's interesting because I tend to look for that kind of thing after I finish the book, because there are themes that may evolve in the course of writing the book that kind of, you know, that don't... that I might not have thought of when I started. What was pretty amazing about this, and I had vaguely remembered it, and then I looked it up to make sure I got it right, was it really, in, it, synopsis of the story. I don't want to give too much away, but you know, we think of bears with, we associate that with Russia, dragons with China, and this obviously talks about the gods of thunder and lightning shattering the whole rain. So there were kind of implications in that line that resonated with me. I use as part of my international/ political backdrop in the story. I use certain things that are happening now with Russia and China and the United States. So I actually couldn't believe. I almost had to read it several times, wondering if, you know, how it could be that this could be so perfectly fitted to the story. How it could suit the story so well. And that's how that ended up top.
And it does, and it is perfect. Now, I think I've mentioned this before. Since I started Joy on Paper, and it's going to be 7 years in March, I have discovered so many sort of golden and silver threads that connect me to the authors that I've interviewed. It might be that they're writing about a story set in a place where I lived, or they mention a restaurant, you know, where I ate. I never forgot, Jill Block, in her book, I had actually eaten in almost every restaurant she mentioned in her book, The Truth About Parallel Lines. So this happens all the time. And of course, with Lee Child, I was actually right there, you know, within a few blocks. I was working a few blocks away from where he was. So it's just, I've had so many connections to the authors, and that of all the poems in the world, you would select this poem because when I lived in San Francisco at one point, I studied Chinese calligraphy. And I'm a bit of an artist, so I love calligraphy. I loved working with the inks. And I actually did a calligraphy of one of Li Bai's, I always say pronounced it Bai, I think, I like it that way, Li Bai's poems. So I wrote it in Chinese. I did the calligraphy of one of his poems. And, wow. You know, nobody, very few people in America certainly know anything about this man. He was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a poet. He was born in 700 and I think 701. He was a fantastic poet. One of the funny things. Well, you know, and he drowned. He died. He drowned, which is, you know, when you think about it, Shelley drowned. So we had two brilliant poets who drowned. Both of them were probably drunk at the time, by the way, because, of course, Lee, one of the funniest things is he wrote one of his most famous poems is called Waking from Darkness Waking from Drunkenness on a Spring Day. And he was actually, that was one of, he drank a lot, and he loved it, and he wrote many of his poems when he was drunk, and wrote about how much he enjoyed being drunk. And the story is that he was in a boat, and he was a little inebriated, and he was reaching for the moon, which was reflected in the water, and he reached out, and of course, he couldn't reach it, but he drowned. And so I always thought about that, you know, when I think of Shelley, and who probably did about the same thing, because I actually did a pilgrimage to where Shelley's body was burned on the beach after they found him. So it was
something
just...
And, you know, there's something grimly poetic about reaching for the moon on the water and dying that way.
Yeah, it is.
You know, there's something there. There's something very visual about it. He probably could write a great poem about that.
And he could, you know. And the funny thing is, of course, he was He's still popular, very popular in at the time of his life. I mean, he was probably the most popular poet. And the interesting thing, of course, he was in the emperor's court. He was invited to the emperor's court, so he was like the official making poems to uplift the emperor. And he had he was a wonderful person, actually, very generous. He was very rich. Cared very much about the common man, gave most of his money away. He was a wonderful role model for somebody who's successful. And the thing is, when I was reading about him, not too long ago, I was reading about him, and I was thinking, a poet for the emperor. And right there, you know, right in court, what would it be like today if we had a poet living in the White House?
It's almost unthinkable.
Yeah, I think it would be more. I don't think the poetry would be quite as brilliant as his poetry really is brilliant, wonderful to read, and there have been many translations. And his work actually has had a great deal of influence in some modern poets, and so it's fascinating. I think if we had a poet in the White House today, they'd sort of be doing Hickory Dickory Dock, the mouse ran up the clock, or something. I don't think we'd have anything of the intellectual nature that Lee wrote. But I was happy that you selected that, because it was really, I got a kick out of it. And as you say, it relates very much to the book. And what do you like to tell people about the book? Because it's always, I hate to give away things, but you can introduce the characters. Of course, I love them. And I'll tell you one thing. That opening scene, I will do anything. I've jumped out of airplanes. I've done all sorts of exciting things in my life. You know, I was a kickboxer. I did it, all of these things. The one thing I could not do, I could not dive. My husband was a great diver. He was from Israel, and he was just always diving, and he loved to dive, and he would always be trying to get me to go in. I couldn't. I just could not get under the water. It terrified me. So the first few pages in this book, you write so beautifully, but I was shivering.
Well, you know, I think it's not giving. People can, you know, go on Amazon and they can obviously read the first few pages. So it's not giving any big secrets away at this point. And I think that to talk about it. And I think that one thing about NetForce is that I've planned out, really loosely planned out, the first four books as a single arc. So I kind of knew that I was going to write that scene probably at some point when I was writing, either late in writing of the first book or certainly by the time I was writing the second book, Attack Protocol. I knew that book three was going to open in the depths of the sea. And back in 2008, I wrote a nonfiction book called All Hands Down, about the disappearance of a submarine called the USS Scorpion in 1968. And that's the wreck of the Scorpion is still resting in 10,000 feet of water off the coast of the Azores Archipelago. And it's actually been inspected numerous times, but most notably in 1969, and then later by Ballard, who was actually on a CIA sponsored mission to inspect the wreckage when he found the Titanic. And that's another story. But in researching that book, I had spoken to the pilot of a DSV, that's a deep water submersible, and he was actually not the pilot who went down in the first dive to the wreckage, but he was a person who was in charge of maintaining the the DSV when it came up and between dives, and he later made a number of abyssal dives into thousands and thousands of feet of water. So we had a lot of conversations over the phone, and at one point I had asked him if he could walk me through, or I guess I should say float me through, a dive. Tell me what it's like, you know, from the time you leave the you know, your lower from the moon, it's called the moon well, from the boat, from the ship, all the way until you get to the bottom. And he spent about an hour and a half on the phone going through it in detail, telling me what you saw, what he saw. He was extremely detailed in his account. So it was great. And that, as I say, that was back in 2000. I think I was working on the book in 2007. It came out in 2008. So it's a while ago. When I started writing the opening scenes was planning the opening scenes for Net Force, and I knew it was going to take place in the depths of the Pacific Ocean, I referred back to that long conversation. And I didn't want to just go back and I didn't want to read the transcript that I had of our call. I didn't want it to kind of, you know, I didn't want it to be my description of what was going on in the story to be kind of a literal, you know, rehash of what he told me. I wanted to do it from memory. So I just referred back to my memory of the call. And then after writing the scene, I fact-checked just to make sure I got everything right in terms of what you see at what depth and certain details. But what you read in that scene, which talks about which is about a deep water diver, and I think he's only at about 1,000 feet, I think, or maybe even less, as opposed to, you know, a depth of thousands of feet. But still, what he sees and what he feels and what he experiences and there's some little things I throw in about what it's like to be preparing for a deep water dive. All of that stuff really, came about as a result of that, writing the other book and the nonfiction and having that conversation all those years before. And I think it really sets off the story, because for me, it's just, I'm with you. I mean, that's one thing I don't think I would do. And, but it really is a different world. It's an alien landscape. And I think that we all kind of think about that. When I was a kid, there was I don't know if you remember, there used to be a show called Diver Dan, and it was puppets. And the villain was Baron Barracuda, and Diver Dan went out down in the old bell suit, you know, the old, with the lead boots. And that always gripped me when I was a kid. So to kind of write this scene and kick off Net Force, Threat Point, was a lot of fun for me. And I figure if it's something that's going to grip me, it's going to get me, it's hopefully going to do the same for readers. So I'm glad you liked it.
Oh yeah, I did. From a distance, as long as I'm not in the water, I enjoyed it. It's a great scene, and it leads into a very complicated, exciting story. And we have like this. It doesn't stop, you know. Putin keeps giving us more and more. All of these people, you know, what would we do without them if they would just all calm down and everybody could be nice in the world? We wouldn't have any books. But I don't. I don't know.
The thing about, you know, kind of, I mentioned bridging Civil War Commando and Net Force, which is, you know, we're talking about the 1860s and Net for Will Cushing's story, and this takes place in the, you know, 2024. I said a couple of years in the future to give myself a little latitude in playing with the technology. But the thing that I try to do with Net Force, and where I think there is a connection to why I like a story like the Cushing story, is that the heroes, yeah, you know, there's certainly a political backdrop. And you know, in this one, I very deliberately made this almost more of a Clancy-esque thriller than the one before, where I used a lot of, there was a lot of geopolitics, and there was a lot of the stuff that's been going on in the South China Sea, stuff that's been, and the interplay between China and Russia and what's, and all that, that stuff. But it's not really a political thriller. It's really about my characters. My characters have a very strong sense of right and wrong. Their motivations are, what they find morally right, and sometimes what they find, in the case of Kali Alcazar, what's right for her may be wrong for the rest of the world, but she acts on her own principles. And even Mike Carmody, who is one of the principal characters in NetForce, a former CIA guy, he's an action guy, and he's been with the special forces. He acts still. He will act primarily on what his gut tells him to do. He acts on there's a higher right and wrong for him than what politics, or even in some cases what strict adherence to the law dictates. Will Cushing grabbed me for that reason. I mean, he was kind of he's a character who was harnessed by the Navy, but he was a guy who was out to right wrongs. That was what he was about from the time he was 9 years old. And in NetForce, it's the same thing. Kali Alcazar, Mike Carmody, all of my principals, these are people who are out to do the right thing. They're out to right wrongs. And it's kind of a good thing that, I impose this structure of NetForce so that they can do it and not get arrested, because sometimes, we all can't be superheroes. But I think that's a theme through my stories. It's about, people who are standing together, who are true to themselves. And I think that's a thread through my nonfiction, through my fiction. And I think one thing about NetForce is I got to spotlight one of the secondary characters, and his name is Amanjot Musil, or Jot Musil, as they call him in the story. And Musil is a Sikh, and one of the first in my books, Sikh members. He starts out as a member of the FBI in book one in Dark Web, and in which he has kind of a secondary role. And in this book, I really got to put him front and center in the action. And I really enjoy the character because, he sees himself as Sikhs do, as warriors of light. And they've been really misunderstood in recent times, especially after 9/11. People kind of associated them with a lot of nasty things that they had nothing to do with, just because they wear turbans. And in fact, we have thousands of Sikhs serving in our military, in the Marines, and all of the armed forces, who are really heroic, and in their way acting like my fictional characters. Their faith and their kind of social structure is that they are they see themselves as heroes, as people who are fighting for the weak and the oppressed. And so to be able to turn the focus on Jot in this book was something I'd wanted to do. And when I finally got to do it in laying out the story, it's one of the things I like most about this book. I just love the guy. I just fell in love with this character. And as I wrote more about him, I liked him even more.
Well, I agree. He's wonderful. And, of course, I fell in love with Kali the minute I read the first, when you first introduced her. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for being a guest today. And, as I said, I could talk to you every week. The new book, and it just came out, is NetForce, Threat Point, and it's available wherever books are sold, and hopefully bookstores are open, and you can even get it and walk into a bookstore and get it. But it's definitely online. It's the third book in this particular series. It's wonderful, everybody. A real action-packed thriller. And lots of twists and turns. It's a beautiful job. And we are going to continue with pushing and telling everybody about Will Cushing and Civil War commando. But again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you. I hope that 2022 will be a very happy new year for you, and that we will somehow, Hollywood is going to wake up and Hollywood is going to grab you, and you'll be working on a wonderful, wonderful miniseries. That's what I'm hoping for you for 2022.
Thank you so much, Patsy. You have a wonderful new year and coming year.
Okay.
We'll speak.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Oh, he's so wonderful. You must get this book. I love with the new book is wonderful, this NetForce Threat Point. If you want some excitement and some thrills and international intrigue and all sorts of stuff like that, wonderful. And then Civil War Commando, if you want to read a book that I know is going to be a streaming video. Just like Jack Reacher is going to be a streaming video on February 4th. My goodness, finally, we've been waiting and waiting for it. And I know that Jim and his brother Drew are so happy and excited that this is finally going to happen. Wow, after this delay with all of this, I can't believe it's the end of the year. This was the 104th program for the year. Is it the 104th? Is today the, or do I have one? What day is it? It's Thursday, right? Yeah, it's 104. My goodness, I'm so confused. It is the last program of the year. I can wish everybody a very, very happy new year. And hopefully, in 2022, a lot of people will, the writing is going to take off. Those of you who finish NaNoWriMo, I know that you're editing your books. I hope that during the upcoming year, you're going to be published, and some of you will be on the program here and telling me about your adventures. Meanwhile, you can go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. He did 12 book buzzes this year, and all for children's books that he recommends. And if you have a child in your life, buy one of those books. If you don't have a child in your life, buy a bunch of those books and send them to one of the children's hospitals, your local children's hospital, St. Jude's or Shriners, because the children in the hospitals need books. They're not allowed to share books anymore because of COVID. So they're really short of books, and all of the children's hospitals would be most appreciative of any book that you send. If you buy one book, if you buy all 12 of the books that Devon suggested, that would be wonderful. Just contact your local hospital, one of the hospitals, and get their address and ship it directly from Amazon. You don't have to do anything else. All you have to do is pay for it and know their address, and it will be wonderful. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And it is so exciting. Her new series, Haunted Haven, is set right here in Florida. And Be My Ghost is the first in the series. She's working on the second one. She's working on the 12th book in Witch City Mysteries. That woman never stops. And that's exactly what Mary Higgins Clark advised everybody. She said, get up in the morning and set yourself a goal, whether it's 500 pages or 1,000 pages, get it done, and then say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Happy New Year, Big Ed. Okay, everybody, take care. He saluted me, I saluted him, because I should have been a general. I'd have been a great general. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Peter King in Orlando. Where you live may determine how long you have to wait for a COVID test. There are long lines in states setting new case records every day, here in Florida and in New Jersey, where this woman is worried about the Omicron variant.
Like, somebody sprinkled some in the air because it's like going rampant everywhere.
Indiana Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box says her state is like many others.
Our COVID-19 hospital census is at the highest level in an entire year. The number of people hospitalized with COVID has increased more than 700% since late June.
And experts say it will get worse in the coming